This is the Aftermarket Radio Network. Communications, one of the biggest problems in the human relationship and among a working team inside your business. Carm Capriotto from the Aftermarket Radio Network and a special Carmcast power panel where we're talking about the power of top internal communications from front to back of shop and with your customer. My panel speaks about the process, communication tools, and how a well-oiled communication system makes for a satisfied employee and a top customer experience. Enjoy. Hey, good afternoon to all of my North American aftermarket peeps. It's another power panel, Carmcast, and boy, I got a bunch of really cool guests that are here today with me. In fact, they're on a repeat. Rinse and repeat, isn't that what we call that, guys?
Yeah. I guess so.
Greg Buckley's back, and so is Brian Kelly.
I call it washed out. No, but
I started out the year thinking, let's do something different. I said, let's do a power panel Carmcast. I thought of Greg and Brian. They both said yes, and they're here for their third, maybe, because the last time we got together was at the end of February, and we talked about To Your Health. Phenomenal episode, guys. There was so much in it, a lot to learn. And today, we've got like three topics, and I'm not sure how, you know, we may just go along with just one of them, and I'm not sure I should tease the audience with all three topics. But Greg Buckley is here, the CEO of the 50-year-plus Buckley Personalized Auto Care in Wilmington, Delaware, who's going through a big remodel, Greg. How cool.
Yeah. home and shop. So it's been crazy. It's different being a general contractor in a sense, because that's what I'm doing. But the experience of service writing and managing a team makes it a little palatable, a little better, you know, but there's still a lot of scheduling to go on and working with different contractors and their timelines. I think fortunate for me, all of the contractors are actually very good friends of mine, and we're not working as friends. We're working as professionals, and they're getting the job done really well, very fast and on time. So
good for you. I see you're in the mobile studio.
I am in a mobile studio. Yes, everything else is compromised at the moment. So this is my safe house.
I love it. Yeah. Greg says, I'm going to be 10 minutes late. And all of a sudden he shows up in his right. car. I mean, what is this the $50,000 mobile studio? What kind of
car? This is the $50,000 mobile studio.
Just checking.
Right.
This isn't the new Ford electric truck, is it?
No, that won't be until next year.
All right, just checking.
So we'll call this the $33,000 studio.
Very
little,
good.
A little bit less.
A little bit less.
So as you talked about your contract, there, I got to say, anytime you hire friends, it's all good when it goes good. You know, so yeah. As long as it doesn't go bad, life is good.
It's excellent. That's right. And they're clients of mine as well. It's a very unique situation. Not many people can say what I'm saying because it's just our community. Unbelievable. But I grew up with most of these guys, and we didn't know one another personally, we knew of each other, and it's just. It's been very, very comfortable. It's been great. So, and the work's been excellent.
Occasionally, those relationships do work out. Occasionally,
they do. Yes,
but you got to work at it, Greg. I mean, you're true to a point that you know there's boundaries, and you want to be respectful of what they're doing for you, what you're paying for, what you need, what you want, and you actually feel that you're going to get a little bit better because of your friendships. Because hell, when it's all done and you want to share a bourbon, you don't want to look them in the eye and have them feel bad about a shitty job being done.
That's true. And you know what's really important? There's no bartering going on here.
Oh, wow.
No barter. It's, you know, I pay them and they pay me. That's, yeah. So it's good.
There's a lesson there. Brian Kelly is with us, owner of Valley Automotive Electric, Covington, Washington, and the Northwest Auto Care Alliance. Are you still an officer?
Yes, I am. Past president.
Past president.
In the VACA. So, yes, indeed.
How cool is that? Well, thanks for being
it's
here,
a good
guys.
Good place to be.
So, we chatted via email, and I'm going to breach the first topic. If we get to the other ones, great. Internal communications, how we communicate as a team. And I know you guys do that really, really well. So, Brian, let me start out with you. Why is that so important?
The first thing I like to talk about is what internal communication is not. And everybody, it's so easy to fall into the trap of oral communication. And, you know, if we as business owners allow all of the conversations internal to be oral, really quickly, there's no accountability. quickly, there's no way to follow up. So I think any place you walk into, we have to have conversations, but there has to be other ways of doing it to expedite, to create a trail, to make it functional. If anybody's ever been on their front counter, you know that it's a constant feed of interruption. And after 8 or 10 customers, do you remember the 4 things that were said to you previously? So how do we, you know, and that's why I say, what is internal communication not? And I always go back to that oral communication because, man, if we try to rely on that, everything fails. And I think that's the point of this whole conversation is what do we do to replace that? And not just to expedite, but to make things more clear, make things fully accountable, and then have a way of following up to make sure things happened, you know, so that whatever it is that we said we're going to do actually does get done. And then that the rest of the trail follows, you know, no different than working on external communication. Because if you don't document your conversation there, what the customer thinks will happen might never happen. So
It's huge. It's like in my mind, I'm thinking of a conduit between front of shop, back of shop, even office, and you know, in lead of the company, the CEO. If it's not wide open and crystal clear, I can imagine how terrible the customer feels after they leave and the things they asked for didn't get done.
Yeah, it starts at the front and it works its way all the way to the back. You know, so for us, you know, when I talk about what do we do, and you know, I would say communication comes up at least twice a week in our meetings. You know, what failed, what worked, and then moving forward, what are we going to do to fix it? And you know, one of the first things we did, and I go back, man, I want to say this was back in the early 2000s, 2005, 2006. One of the first things we implemented was an instant messenger of some kind. And I think at the time it was probably Yahoo, you know, so you had Yahoo Messenger and everybody had one and you worked through that. It was easy to check into, easy to see what was going on. It was functional. Then of course, you know, times change. We need more. So like now we're using our internal, so we use both a messenger, which we use Teams. I don't know if, you know, we're mostly a Microsoft shop in Northwest. So that's what happens up here. We use that in combination with our service writer software. We use Protractor software. So there's places to put notes. There's places to do internal communication to each other in the point of sale. So it actually tracks it with each invoice. And then of course, if you need things right away and you want that quick alert, you go into Microsoft Teams, you shoot what you have and boom. It's there ready, you know, and the nice thing about that is when you're using it, if there's any question and somebody missed it or you just forgot to do it and you look back and go, oh, wait, there's still a message there. Boom, you can instantly check on yourself.
So, Greg, Brian says he's a Windows shop, and I know one thing in particular. Aren't you guys all about iOS, or I think that's the code name for Apple?
Apple, yeah, we're iOS, Mac, and it just turned out that everyone that we have working with us is iOS, or we convert them. You know, we find it it's very easy to communicate with one ecosystem. Like Brian has Microsoft and uses Teams. You know, for us, iOS has always been with us, so both personally and business. And it makes it easy for us to send documents, updates, everything directly to each of us if it need be. Now, if it is, official documents, we have Slack and we'll take advantage of that. We'll put up our SOPs, we'll put notes, we'll put initiatives. So like Brian is alluding to or was referencing that, you know, you can go back and it's sticky. It's going to be there. You can go back and look at it, review it. And I think one of the biggest things that Brian may have mentioned, you have to be willing to have that openness for communication, good communications to occur. Meaning that as an owner, or if you have a specific manager, you or they have to be willing to be open. And I think that if you create an environment where, you know, you're keeping everything to yourself and, you know, the only time that you need something said or you have to say something is when something goes wrong, then you're not going to have a great open line of communication. And that's going to be pretty hard. You know, you want to work it, allowing people to express themselves or to talk, whether it's one-to-one, whether it's to associate to, you know, team member to team member. And of course, definitely in a group setting, once those barriers are open, you start to have a better, you start to build a better team. One that, you know, you can guide as their leader, you can start to guide and, you know, just become more efficient and a better shop.
Here's the words, Brian, Greg, that I pulled from this discussion so far: instant, sticky, accountable, and open. I mean, you know, if you were going to write yourself an SOP on communications, you know, to me, those would be it. And then you would define it. And then the tools that you use to make all that happen. So, yeah. Brian, there's a tech in the shop and he just wants to tell the service advisor, listen, I'm done with the digital vehicle inspection. What happens at that moment that he wants to get that? You know, you don't want him to walk because those steps take him away from other stuff.
Oh, yeah. Well, if he needs parts, if there's any reason that he would typically go up front, he's right into the instant messenger. You know, and as we're talking about this, I remember one of our conversations, and the response was, hey, every time I send something back to the text, it takes him 20 or 30 minutes to respond to me. And, you know, this is coming from our service counter. I said, that's kind of weird. You know, they make noise. We should be able to hear it. And it just turned out it was loud enough in the shop that you weren't hearing the computer speaker. So for a period of time, we had these large speakers pretty much on every workstation that you could hear the double ding, because that was the only way we could get it loud enough to overcome the noise in the shop. So, I mean, in fact, I think my manager in the back still has his, I'm going to call it his 1980 stereo hooked up with these two giant speakers on it. And every time you hit it, it blares through the whole shop, you know, which, I mean, it was a great fix, but yeah, it's amazing how as each iteration comes of what you do, you're constantly fine tuning and figuring out where those problems are, because that's really the key.
I was speaking and I can't remember. It was in the last couple of weeks. Someone was on the show and they were doing it. They were describing a little bit of this. And they said that every tech has a laptop. Every tech has a tablet and every tech has an earpiece. And so when that ding comes in, then nobody's looking around saying, what computer did that come from? It's coming from their earpiece, which is assigned apparently to that computer, and it's easy to communicate back and forth. So everybody's walking around with some form of earpiece.
Yeah, we tried that. That was an interesting debacle for us. We got rid of
a debacle.
What would happen is they'd be working, they'd fall out. So I think one got run over. I think one got, you know, just flat disappeared, probably got left in a car under a dash or something. And the guys just hated him for us, you know. And so it's interesting. We are constantly trying and trying to make it better. But yeah, it never ends. That's for sure.
I kind of always thought that those dings and earpieces it was like a bad Pavlov's dog experiment.
Ding, I agree.
Okay, ding. You know, so, okay. You know, what exercise do I need to do now to get the reward? But yeah. You know, you're right, Brian. You're constantly trying to create much more efficient levels of communication, and I think that in order to be successful in everything, I mean, communication is so important, not only just internally, but externally. I mean, I find that the best communicators are typically the most successful ones, you know, the most successful business people, because they know how to articulate their thoughts. They know how to read the audience. They understand the dynamics of not only speech, but body language. And all that comes into communication. And if you do that well, you really can lead that much better. So that's why it's like, you just can't like throw it in and to have an effective meeting and stuff like that. And then especially with the front counter, I always try to tell them to definitely polish up on the use of the English language, use correct verbiage, descriptions, and then be watchful and mindful of the client's body language when they come in, when they get out of the car. It's the same way with your team members. I mean, I'm only one shop and I've got a good crew, but you know, when you come in and they quote unquote read the room, you got to be able to read the room, you know, besides look at your numbers, of course, but reading the room is really important. And that's even in the middle of the, of your meetings. You know, you got to be able to read that room. So it's all part of communication.
That's critical.
Totally agree. Greg, you told, I think you said you use Slack.
Yes.
I use it amongst me and Tracy and all the peoples that are in the Aftermarket Radio Network. And it is a cool tool. Mm-hmm. For, I mean, not necessarily instant communications, because if you're not there, you're not seeing it or hearing it. But the really nice thing, Brian and Greg, I'm sure you guys see the value in the fact that it's not only on, it could be on the tablet, it could be on the desktop, but it could also always be on the mobile device.
On the mobile device, yes.
And so as far as touching and connectivity, it's there. Thank you, Jennifer. Bill, Mr. Nalu is here. Hello, William. Scott Felzer, not so sunny West Seneca, New York. Thank you. And there was this question that, do you encourage youth team or your team to own iOS products or provide them in the workplace?
I do, in a sense. I mean, I don't demand, you can't demand that they use, but the difference is well known once they start getting into the culture and they start recognizing what we're able to do. Slack takes care of that. There's always been a big argument. Well, you know, you could do everything through apps and this and that. The problem with apps is that you still have to learn how to use the app within the phone's or their device. And it makes it complicated if I want to send direct messages or alerts or something of that nature. So it's just much more, it's smoother for us if, you know, you would. And I'm more than willing to buy the phone. It's not that, you know, I have no problem with that. You know, if they want to use the phone here or their phone or whatever, we back it up also because we have iOS iPads for their work and for communicating internally. We have that as well. So I don't demand it. I let them see the importance of it. And if they want to, fine, I assist. But if they don't, I just don't have it. Everybody I've brought on is iOS. I mean,
So if I sat down across from you in an interview and I'd say, Greg, I heard this about you, that if I don't have an Apple phone, I won't get the job, right?
He waits for you to pull it out and check your message.
Right. I'll say, you will not be starting at the level that we discussed.
What are you doing?
I got to spend $2,000 on a phone for you. Hey, Brian, with what you guys do, I think the phone would be agnostic, Apple or Android. It wouldn't matter, right?
Doesn't really matter. I have a Apple phone for myself, but we use SharePoint as more of our, you know, more to carry documents. We have our own site, so it's its own setup for us. And you know, we've thought about using Slack. You know, that might be something we'll look at. But the SharePoint's been pretty functional, overlaid with Teams, because you can share documents, you can share anything you want through Teams as well. So it makes for us very clean system.
Cool. I don't know enough about Teams, but I do know one thing. When I go on a team webinar or a Zoom, when I go on a team Zoom call, which is not right, I'm not comfortable with how it works. I have to learn it. Do you guys have the same thing?
You know, it's funny. I don't use that part of Teams.
Okay.
You know, so I'm pretty much all Zoom otherwise. But just like you, when I've been called into a few of the meetings with Teams, I'm confused because the settings aren't the same.
Yeah. You know, once you really get used to something, you know, Greg, Brian, you get so comfortable with it. And then, well, how do they get all four people up on the screen at once? And how do they do this? And where's my mute? And so you're always struggling. Just happened to me this week. I was just so frustrated with trying to make Teams work for me because of how I like to see it set up. I mean, I think everyone's gotten used to how they would love to view a meeting with multiple people on it.
Yeah, and I think even more so because I live in Idaho. I'll log in to do our virtual meetings and I have to use Zoom, even though I've got Teams, because I'm just not comfortable with it. So it's interesting how we...
Wait a minute. What do you mean you live in Idaho?
I live 4 hours from the shop.
But I didn't know it was in a different state. Really?
Yeah. Oh yeah. So completely detached from it. So, you know, when I...
Are you a potato farmer or what's going on here?
Am I a potato farmer? No. The funny as that is, do you know there's more potatoes farmed in Washington than there are in Idaho?
Now that goes to marketing. Let's talk about marketing.
Yeah, there you go. So, but you know, anytime you're near the Palouse, that's what you get. So good. good stuff.
It's a great thing to hear Brian talk about his shop and his people. And he goes into the shop, every couple of weeks maybe, and you spend a few days, and how he's running a successful shop living 4 hours away.
Yeah, I think as a leader, you don't have to be there every day. It gets back to what we're talking about, communication. You know, it's communication, expectations. You know, even when Greg talked about his contractors, that's the first thing that comes into my mind is we set expectations, then we communicate to those expectations. And then if we don't have the right expectation, then we renegotiate. You know, so all of it leads back to how we communicate in the beginning, during, and the finish. And, you know, it's no different front of the house or back of the house.
Greg, I think we need to do an episode with Brian and Andy Bizzub, because Andy Bizzub he lives in Dallas and his shops are in Chicago.
That would be good, because I do watch you guys, and Andy's been very influential on learning how to manage remotely. And Brian, when we first got together, I had no idea you were 4 hours away. And I love that. I think it's amazing that you can be that effective and on point, being that far distance, that much of a distance away. It's encouraging.
You and Patty need to retire to Florida, Greg, and keep running the shop.
It's getting there. It's close.
I always drop a little thing and see what Greg says.
And make no mistake, though, you still have to have the right people. You know, you can have the best communication in the world with the wrong people, and they're still not going to get it accomplished. So it still comes down to having the right people.
It really does. It's getting closer for myself, and it's here now for, you know, what we have going on. But watching you and Andy really do this is, like I said, it's very encouraging. And there's another Bruce Howes, who I'm familiar with. I don't know if Bruce, he runs two locations in Maine, and then you got Seth Thorson as well, who's, I think he's up to number five. And locally, there's a few here that I you know, a gentleman by the name of Paul Campanella, he's just opened his fifth location. All of you have really honed in your, not only your processes, but your communication levels. You have the people in place. And like I said, it's inspirational and encouraging and something for all shop owners to really study, because it may sound like you're sitting here in the desk and you're 4 hours away and everything is hunky dory, but we all know that that's just on the surface and the undercurrents really do take a lot of work to navigate. So,
well, you can't, you know, and this ties back into communication as well. You can't be Superman.
No.
You can't fly in to fix everything. Just like you can't be, as an owner, you can't be the central hub for communication. Mm-hmm. Communication has to be neutral, and your employees can't think that everything has to roll through you. I've got a friend who has a shop down in Georgia. And, you know, one of the challenges he'd kind of run into is everybody made him the central hub for communication. And, you know, my conversation to him was, you probably need to take a few days off a week until everybody retrains and quits coming to you for that central hub. Because as owners, we want to be the guy that does it. We want to be that Superman. And if we are the hub, if we are the spot that takes all that communication, it's absolute destruction when we're not there. So, you know, that's I think one of the biggest takeaways when you're not able to be there is people still figure it out, and they have to have the lines of communication between each other.
We had a great, great episode yesterday, Aftermarket Weekly, with Brett Beechler, and I found out how anal he was for processes. I mean, he'll get up in front of everyone and says, him and Craig Noel are the process guys. And then when we got a tour of his place, and every once in a while we're doing, I said, stop, what is that? And then stop, and what is that? And you could actually see the processes in play. Here's where the clipboards are, and here's where this is. And you see this, if this is empty, there was an assumptive knowledge from the team, because we taught them, that says that isn't in play, but this is in play. How do we not lose keys? And all those little things that happen that destruct, if you will, the flow of work. And it was so, so neat to see. Now, of course, it's on my YouTube channel. It'll come out as a podcast on Saturday. But I really want to encourage everyone to check out Brett Beechler's Aftermarket Weekly, because he is one of the king of processes. Well, there was one Facebook comment. Let me put this up. It says, in certain situations, when the advisor is assigned to a hard-to-explain condition, having them engage in a role play with the tech to make sure that they are explaining it properly can prevent a miscommunication event with a client. That's a really cool idea about communicating.
I didn't mention this before, but that just reminds me, a lot of what will happen between front and back is you'll get stories to the advisor about what was done to the vehicle. You know, so tested this, found, did the, you know, so they'll walk through the steps and then exactly what you're talking about right there. Now that can immediately, and I've even had Emily, who's at my front counter, I've had her go, hey guys, I don't actually know the terminology, so I'm going to read you what the technician sent me. If you have any more questions, I'll call you back. And the point being, she's got it and she's able to at least reiterate what was said to her, and it wasn't oral, so now she can look at it. You know, so it does happen. Our front counter, if they were as technical as the ones in the back, they'd probably be back there making us money, not selling on the front counter. So there has to be that bridge, and that's a lot of times what you find.
Not only just getting it from the tech to advisor, but advisor to the client. Brian, how do you make the analogies that are understood by the advisor well enough to translate that to a client? I mean, that's what's key. So I try to encourage them to take from the tech to the advisor. We always try to, you know, in our huddles, if there's something that needs to be explained, we'll explain it from the technical side and then try to give a rational kind of, you know, it's like this kind of thing. Role-playing is pretty important with it. Mm-hmm. Going to the client, I relate to the client's experiences. If they're a doctor or a nurse or, you know, a health practitioner, anything of that nature, kind of related to maybe like, a function of the body or something happening medically. If they're in construction, it's, you know, connect this to that and all that kind of stuff. Again, it comes down to knowing the client and getting the explanation through with them understanding it on their terms. If I would show you, like I said, my perfect example is, you know, look at your elbow and your wrist, and there you go. You've got the perfect analogy for a CV shaft. Okay, so it's very easy to say, you know, it's creaking here, it's creaking here, it's not turning right. So little things like that could go a long way, but it's always good to role play throughout that whole stream, that whole process right there.
Yeah, role plays are critical. Yeah. I mean, if you're not doing some sort of role play, and I think role play is more critical with the, I would say, middle low end. You know, so if you're newer to the field, if you're less educated or topics you don't understand, role play is absolutely critical. Mm-hmm. But I'll find with my senior staff, the role play is less critical, but they're giving it to others to help them. And, you know, it's funny you said the medical field, because that's 90% of what we make analogies with. You know, it's always about some part of the human body. Is it about the heart? Is it about, you know, restricted blood flow? Is it about, you know, like you said, the U joint, you know, or the CV axle, I should say, you know, which piece is it?
Yeah. It used to be where we would be discouraged to compare automotive technology to any other type of situation. And that always went against the grain with me. I mean, to be effective and getting the client to buy in and understand, we have to relate to how they think the vehicle or what the injury to the vehicle is and how it relates to them so they can understand it. And once they understand it, they go, oh, okay, now I get it. You know, and that's key.
It's critical.
A thought that I had while I was listening to both of you guys, how long does it take for a service advisor, brand new, okay? We recruited this service advisor. This person was a waiter, waitress, loved customer service. They didn't want to work weekends. We recruited them. We brought them in. We've done all this training. But how long does it take to start to get that lingo going to give that customer the confidence that they really were able to explain articulately enough, buying in enough, trustworthy enough? Do you put a person on the counter and say, if we work it really hard, it'll take about a year? What's your experience, Brian?
Well, is the customer an engineer or a sports dad? And that'll be a big factor in the answer. But, you know, if it's a sports dad, 6 to 8 months. If it's an engineer, good luck. You're just going back to the tech and get the info. But I would say in most cases, within that 6 to 12 months time, depending on the person, they're going to get enough skills to get there. They're going to be role playing. They're going to be working on it for probably 2 to 3 years to really get it burned in. But that. And it depends on the capability of the person, but within 6 months, they usually have enough knowledge that they're able to work somewhat on their own. And then by 12 months, they're pretty much all by themselves and they're just honing and learning and in the back of the shop, in the front, you know. And we actually try and match in our shop when we have somebody coming up who's going to be working on the service counter who has very little knowledge. They're almost the go-between all the time between the techs and information so that they can learn it. You know, so they get, in a lot of ways, it's a secondary position. Instead of just saying, oh, I've got one service advisor, now I've got two, I always run a primary and a secondary. And that way you've always got the handoffs going back and forth. And that newer person's now getting all the information. And you find out really quick, are they taking it in or are they just kind of getting whitewashed over again?
Greg, have you ever had the challenge? You've got legacy people in your company.
My son, Scott, was nowhere near cars. He never really had growing up and in the household, never really got around cars at all, except for what, you know, every young boy would go through of wanting fast, speedy, you know, fast and furious type situations. But when he started working with me, very green to begin with, but he picked up very quickly. And then I would take him from job to job and say, this is what it is. This is how we do it. This is why. And then with his, you know, just natural knowledge and curiosity, he became an amazing advisor on his own. And it took about a year and a half to get to an intermediate, you know, level. Now it's superior and he's able to fly with anything. So,
hey, let's bring up one more Facebook comment. Imagine using the wrong terms in describing the solution, using the wrong terms. I think that may be a repeat. And then having a customer fact check you and find your mistakes.
That's the engineer.
That's the engineer, right?
That's the engineer. Yeah, that's what they do to you.
And that's got to be a huge challenge. Anybody have a story?
The enthusiast is almost equal to an engineer. And when they're combined together, then, you know, it's like going to enjoy a glass of wine and talking to a chemist. You know, it's like they take the fun out of it. And that's from wine. But, you know, it's like, you know.
it's really good. Truth. I love that.
It's the truth. But
you can
go ahead and explain in a manner that, I'm not saying that you're not going to make a mistake, but you're doing your best to try and get them to understand. If they're going to go back and fact check you and do all that, well, all right, well, that's their right. And you come back and go, well, I really meant it this way. I, you know, it's one of those things where the conversation is fluid. You're trying to get to a resolve. So the conversation is kind of open-ended and both parties would have to agree or become agreeable. And if not, all right, well, move on. That's all.
You know what? A conversation comes to mind for me and it was, don't remember what engine it was we were dealing with, but we laid out kind of a thought pattern to the customer and they called us back and they are this enthusiast and engineer mind. And he comes back and he says, so I looked into this and I just want to know what serial number is my engine. Because it looks like between these two I'm going, well, hey, dude, if you want to go and figure out what serial number it is, that's fine. We haven't gone that far, you know, right. but they'll dig it to that depth sometimes. Wow. And you're going, oh my gosh, you know, and when this happens to some of your seasoned veterans, you know, they're going, well, okay, let's see what we want to do. But I think a lot of it comes down to, again, the people. You know, I said earlier, hiring the right people. It comes down to putting the right people in place on your front counter that are customer people that know how to speak, not technology, not technical. They know how to speak people and they know how to win people because that's what the game's all about. It's about making them feel safe. And then if you do screw it up, because we all do. You know, we go in. I mean, I had a conversation with a guy about the wrong car one time. And you want to talk about confused on his part. And then I had to say, you know what, Mr. Jones, I'm really sorry, but this wasn't, I talked to you about the wrong car and that's my fault. But you own it. And guess what? When you screw it up and you own it, they pretty much just let it go.
Right.
And that's the key.
That's a great story. You know, to the whole thought of communications, which we started to talk about. Writing a novel was something people always told me. The more information you give a technician about what the customer is telling you, the better. And it's probably the same way when it goes to actually explain and or sell the job that you want that technician to be as clear as possible and without having to run back up to the counter, without having to produce the steps, keep them at, you know, because the information that could be typed in versus the walk up and the in my ear, that's vapor. It doesn't have a home. That communication doesn't have a home, to your point of accountability, Brian.
No, definitely not. You know, so when you talk about customer stories, you know, on the intake side, I always say that's one of the most important things that we do. And we have, I think, 10 or 12 different forms that we will grab. We'll text it over to you, and then you can fill the form out, and then we get it back for the technicians. And, you know, when you think about the information that's coming, now it's in customer language. So, you know, my technicians, well, you know, what they said here isn't, I understand, you know, but you're closer. And, you know, because technicians always want it in their language. And but we found a way to at least get close. That form makes a difference on the intake, but it's just as critical on the outtake when the customer receives their car, that there's a good story from the technician, not just replace bad part.
Yeah.
And how many times, you know, and I audit a lot of repair orders from other shops, and it blows my mind the stuff that I see on them. You know, it's literally replace part or did job. You know, there's no story to how they got there, what was going on, and why they replaced it. Just literally the replacement. And yeah, I think back to, you know, as a customer, if I see that invoice, there's no value there either. You know, so it's, I mean, you're just shooting yourself in the foot because you're not taking the time to fully do the job. You're not communicating what had to be done back to the customer, especially when it's more than just the most obvious. You know, if you're working on it and there was extra steps that had to be done, why do we not document that? Why do we not tell our customers, and why do we not get paid for it?
You know what I love? The whole doctor thing here, guys. Just think, if you went to the doctor and he wrote down a pain in knee, and that's all he wrote down, and a year later you come back and instead of saying, you know, we sent you a thing, it was a muscle cramp, and you know, you were bending wrong and all that stuff. I mean, these two or three word answers to problems will not only it's a gray area now, but it could be a gray area in the future too.
I'll tell you, you know, you talk about record keeping. I recently signed up for a portal for our local hospital group here for my dad. And he took a really bad spill a few weeks ago. So we had some issues to deal with. So I put him in a portal so that we would be able, everybody would be able to check his records. So every action is detailed. I went into this portal, and I'm telling you, when you talk about detailed records, every action, every medicine, every prescription, every like waking moment, test results, everything is in this file. And it's detailed, but I will tell you that there are more acronyms used than I've ever seen in my life. And I know that us in the automotive field love our acronyms.
You
know, acronyms. But the medical society is way above our level. And I mean, you got to decipher it. It's all there, but you got to really decipher it. But the important thing is that I can check on my father's health anywhere. And I can share that in a PDF, document it, and share it with the rest of my family. You know, forms do work. It's good to have them. And having good, like I said, you know, Brian, you talked about having that flow of information from start to beginning back to the client on the repair side is really important. The intake is also critical for us to get that to have that information to do the job. So
I know you are so busy, Greg. You're taking your lunchtime to be with us. Brian, maybe your second cup of coffee out there on the West Coast. But I call it the power panel. I loved it. We talked about internal communications. I think we nailed it. There was a lot of great stuff here, a lot of good takeaways. And we can see now how well your company's run because of your passion for that. Greg Buckley, 50-year-plus Buckley's Automotive, Personalized Auto Care, Wilmington, Delaware, and Brian Kelly,
sir.
Valley Automotive, Covington, Washington. Guys, thanks so much for a great, great show. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Carm.
Thank you, Carm.
Good to see you, Brian.
Appreciate it. Yeah, good to see you, Greg.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.